Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Google had a project called Project Nightingale. It was a secret project that gathered up personal health data on millions of Americans across 21 states. Now there's a bipartisan group of senators that are asking questions about how all of this began and how much of this was done with the knowledge of the patients that had their information gobbled up. Google is a company that scares me. It does a lot of things for society. We do a lot of things with Google. We depend on Google for a lot. Google is now a verb. Google me. Yeah, there's a word for that. You know, I mean, that's a word. It's a verb in our English language to Google something. But it's actually a company whose slogan used to be, don't be evil. Joining me now is health expert and health consultant Seth Denson with more on this. Seth, welcome to the program. How are you? Thanks for coming on the Disruption Zone.
Hey, always good to be with you, my friend. And you know, interestingly enough, don't be evil is no longer their slogan. So yeah. That kind of could scare you even more, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think they realized the hubris of such a statement. But yeah, I mean, they were doing things that could be considered evil when you think about just the fact that they recognize the power that they have as a corporation and they use it for what they think is good. It was just recently after the Trump election, you know, they had the videos of Google executives who were bemoaning how they weren't going to let this happen again. You know, those are decisions that are being made by a corporation that has an enormous amount of influence over the knowledge base that the American people have by the nature of what they do. So, yeah, it's a scary company, in my opinion.
You know, it is. And I think that as we start to think about these big data companies and all the information about every American that's out there on the web, you know, the fewer companies that have access to more information, I say this all the time, when information and things that we do online are free, you are the currency.
Yeah, yeah, that's 100%. We have become the product. In fact, I think it goes even farther than that, because I think your point is very good. I think even the companies that are selling us products, we're still the product, you know, because there's so much money in the data about people. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day in 2008. I think it was I may be a little bit off on some of my numbers here, but in 2012, I think it was, President Obama had about 109 data points on almost every American voter. And, you know, through social media and all that stuff. And everybody thought that was just staggering. But in 2016, President Trump had something like 360 data points on every American voter. So with 360 data points, you can predict and even potentially manipulate people's actions. Google has all of that and more. And now they might have your health information as well, which to me is a staggering thought.
It's scary when you think about it in that realm, and you're absolutely right. The digital fingerprint is more broad now than it ever was. And, yeah. You know, interestingly enough, when I read this story, too, and there was part of me that started to cringe. And then there was the part of me that kind of the more, I will say, realist side of me that said, yeah, Google probably already knows everything about me already. and the reason I say that is for all the points that you've just outlined. But also when it comes to our health, and listen, I'm guilty of this. If my doctor came to me and said, hey, Seth, this is something we're seeing and we may be concerned about it, the very first place I'm going to go
is Google.
Right? Or to another point, if I'm not feeling well or I've got something going on and I'm just curious before I go see my doctor, the first place I'm going to go?
Google.
Right. This is where I'm going to go to try to find information. So in reality, I have probably already told Google just about everything about my health anyway.
You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about how, and this was kind of a knock on pharmaceuticals, but they were saying the vast majority, it said 80% of the time when a patient goes to a doctor and says, I want this pill, they get it. Why is it that that happens so often? Exactly what you just said. We'll Google our ailment, go into a doctor who now, because of our screwed up healthcare system, has only 5 minutes with us, if that. We tell them what we think it is. That influences their decision about what they think it is, and they give us the pill we ask for, and we go home and we don't actually solve the problem. So your point is very well taken. And I guess what Google was doing, I mean, let me play a little devil's advocate, because clearly I'm against Google having access to my health information. They're just sure. not the company I want to hold that. But the upside potential of what you're pointing out is a place where all my information is, so that my doctor isn't taking my word for it because I Googled, what is that mark on my neck? You know, it becomes maybe there's an upside to this where the information that they have could potentially be more informing to a doctor.
Yeah, I think there's two sides that I'm looking at this from that perspective. First, and I'll just throw this out there, they should have had a different name besides Project Nightingale. I mean, yeah. To me, that just sounds like a covert spy mission.
It sounds like
right?
something out of The Hunger Games, which is dystopian to begin with, right? Nightingale? Really? Really?
Yeah, exactly. So, but second and foremost, and again, now Google is obviously walking this whole project back, and as is, you know, the healthcare system, Ascension Health, who hired them, who, by the way, you know, Ascension Health treats about a sixth of the U.S. population.
Right.
So, you know, so they've got a lot of records already, but, you know, they're very clear right now in saying, hey, the information that Google is effectively just serving as a cloud-based storage facility for us
right.
to aggregate this data so that we have access to your EHR, your electronic health record, and the doctors, and we can navigate within the system effectively from that perspective. Now, that's the talking point, right? And quite frankly, under HIPAA laws currently in the United States, if they were doing anything erroneously with that, right. well, you could sue the snot out of them,
well,
right?
But because, how did they get this data, though, without asking for this from people directly? Because my understanding is that they haven't answered that question yet, that the senators involved are saying, hey, who did you ask permission to get this information from? And Google's not answering that question.
Well, this is that weird part of all those terms and conditions and those HIPAA forms that you sign when you go to your doctor. And just about every time I'm in my doctor, they say, hey, we have an updated HIPAA form we need you to sign, right? That, by the way, nobody ever reads because it's about 28 pages long and it's written right. in lawyer speak. But in these documents, we have effectively granted the rights oftentimes to our providers to say, hey, we may use a third-party storage vendor for some of this data, and or we have vendors or people that we will share this data with inside of our ecosystem, but that they in turn also right. abide by HIPAA protection. So sadly, we probably have given release for Google to get this, maybe not directly.
Right.
We may not have even had Google listed, but in those terms and conditions, we've said, hey, if you, the provider, have approved them, then I in turn approve them as well.
Well, here's where Google may run afoul even yet, though. Because if they're just a storage facility, you know, Google, it took me a long time to trust Google with my email, and I still don't, but they are my email, you know, because everything now is in the cloud. And I'm like, as soon as some hacker figures out the cloud, oh my God, everybody's email is out there. But here's where they might run afoul of that, because in the Wall Street Journal article, it says, you know, there's a section in there. It says the tech giant is teaming with Ascension on an ambitious project to crunch patient data for treatment and administrative purposes. Bam. Right there, you have two outside companies perusing the data. So they're crunching it, which means they're perusing it. They're looking through it. That, to me, seems like more than just storing it. That's an active participation in what those two companies believe is the proper path for a doctor to treat us.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those areas where quite literally the devil can be in the details.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what are they doing with this? I've said the same thing, you know, when Amazon Health came out. And Amazon decided, you know, Jeff Bezos decided, hey, we want to start this healthcare division. It's the argument of, well, what are you going to do with that information?
Right.
Am I now going to now get random opportunities to purchase that which might ail me or that which can help support which
right.
ails me?
Right.
Because that's not what I want to have happen here. And so I think as this becomes clearer as time goes on, and likely if three senators and bipartisan senators, by the way, I think it's two Democrats and one Republican, are pushing for this, then eventually Google's going to get called to Congress and we're going to hear some testimony.
Yeah. Let me paint a scenario for you that might be, I don't know, people might accuse me of putting on a tinfoil hat. But let's look at it this way. There's one big push right now on the left. The left would like to study gun violence as an illness. specifically a mental illness. There's a lot of push to try to create new laws around the area of mental illness dealing with people with guns. And imagine when Google has the power as a left-wing company to associate for a doctor ahead of time. Hey, Leland's coming in to see you for a physical. We see here last week he Googled ammunition, and the week before that he Googled depression, right? Now we're putting two and two together. Now, this is a stretch, but you can see how potentially this type of information could be abused and could be used politically.
No question. And I think that's the concern that's on pretty much every reasonable-minded American that sees or reads this story or hears about it from guys like you is, hey, well, wait a minute. How much cross-pollination is going on with my information? Is now my, you know, interestingly enough, humans are more honest with Google than we are with anybody else, right?
Yes.
So, and when we go to Google, we think that information's mine. Like, I'm not out there publicizing all of this. And so the idea that that can be blended into some type of record that could either, let's say, impact my health insurance premiums or, you know, to your point, going to impact the way that I'm treated by society, my doctor, the federal government. All of those things are questions that absolutely need to be asked, because at the end of the day, the American citizen needs to have their information protected at all costs. Now, that being said, the American citizen, quite frankly, stinks at protecting their own information.
Correct.
We freely give it out anytime, all the time.
Yeah.
And so there's some culpability in this as well.
Agreed.
That we need to take some responsibility for.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, just to buffet my point from earlier, it's not that far of a stretch, because I'm already getting notes from listeners about doctors who are asking about guns in their homes. So there is a nexus there that could come together. But back to your point, yes, we are culpable in this because everything that's convenient requires our data, and we want convenience above all else. In this society, which is a consumer-based society, we no longer have to go out and kill our own meat. We no longer have to go out and grow our own food. We are a convenience-based society. Our entire economy is based on it, and convenience, the price of convenience is your data. And you're absolutely right about that. Let me talk for a second, though, about the possible upside of this. As much as I distrust Google, as you could tell through the first 12 minutes of this conversation, but the upside of this would seem to be, you and I have had a lot of conversations about the broken healthcare system, and we both agree that free market solutions are the ultimate answer to the ailments. But is one of the ailments in our health system information?
Oh, no question. I think that information is the, it is the element, but it's also the solution, right?
Yeah.
Because Americans, by and large, you mentioned just a minute ago, we are a consumer-driven society. We actually consume and shop and do quite well. That's why Amazon's successful. That's why companies like eBay have had success, and you know, effectively, that's what supported the internet, e-commerce.
Right.
When it comes to healthcare, though, we're just as bad at that as we are at protecting our privacy. The average American, I think I've mentioned this to you before, spends 10 hours researching a car before they make a purchase. They spend on average 2 hours researching a flat screen TV. They spend 15 minutes on healthcare.
Right, right.
We blindly trust people in white lab coats.
Right.
And so this is interesting. I did an interview with Fox recently on Amazon's entrance into the system, and they asked me, are you okay with the security risk of this? And, you know, well, listen, 80% of hospital systems have reported data breaches.
Right.
So your information's not secure as much as you might think it is anyway. That being said, there is a balance between a company with power to provide me information might help me navigate the system. Can I find that MRI cheaper? Can I find out that there's alternatives to that drug?
Right.
All of that information is power. And so there is a balance, and where we strike that balance is important. But at the end of the day, information is absolutely a solution to this.
Well, okay. And this is a scenario that I could see. Let's say you get into a car crash on vacation in another state. You go in, and because it's stored in the cloud, the doctor who is working on you can immediately see, all the medications you're on, all the complications that may arise, all the issues you currently may have, and then can make treatment decisions based on that, because it's in the cloud, it's immediately available instead of having to call or check or email or send this request. It's there. And as long as, you know, you've given permission for them to access that cloud, boom, they download all the stuff. Or, you know, even if you have a health event, you know, or something like that in another place, or you move, you know, instead of having to go through all the trouble of finding a new doctor and then tell them all the stuff that's happened to you, bam, it's right there. It's available to them in the cloud. I mean, I could see that as being a huge positive.
See, you're already talking yourself into this.
No,
I love it,
no,
right?
No, I can't stand Google. I don't trust Google. I hate Google. I don't trust them. And yet I'm a customer.
You make a real valid point there in that, you know, it is challenging when I have maybe I see a cardiologist and then I see, I don't know, a podiatrist,
right?
Or I see, right, all of these different things, or even for me as a parent, right, my kids, right, trying to keep track of, oh, which kid had that, and which kid's got this. And now it's 5 years later and you're in an emergency situation and you're in the emergency room and they say, is your kid allergic to any type of drug, or they ever had a reaction? You're going, oh, my gosh, which kid was that?
Right.
Right. The information is power, and this can really help us if we do it right. But again, it does come in balance with, what are we doing with my information? Who's in the end going to have access to it, and what are they going to be able to do with that?
Yeah, we have really good stuff. Again, I'm just going to put myself down as a no, but I see the upside. I see the pros to it as well. I would need an enormous amount of assurance that a company that I believe is already doesn't have my best interest in mind is going to do the right thing with my medical information. But I do see the upside. Before I let you go, though, we got to talk about the coronavirus. I told my wife earlier, I was like, I got to make a run out tonight to the grocery store, because apparently everybody's buying toilet paper, which I don't understand, because the coronavirus does not give you diarrhea. But people are buying toilet paper off the shelves. It's nuts. Are we overblowing this thing?
Yeah, at this point, yes. I mean, listen, I got to be careful. I don't want us to look up in 3 weeks and somebody say, boy, what was Seth and Leland talking about, right? You guys were way off your rocker. So, listen, it's the unknown, right? There's a German proverb that says that fear makes the wolf bigger.
Yeah.
Right? And that's, I think, what we're dealing here. Listen, if we actually just break down the numbers, and I'll just put this into perspective for you. So, China, right? Massive population, 1.8 billion people. If we've got 100,000 people, if we believe that number, and there we have a whole conversation about that, but if we have 100,000 people that have it, that is 0.07 of a percent,
right,
of their population that have contracted this illness.
Right.
And mind you,
and by the way, a population that lives very close to each other.
That's what I was about to say.
Oh, okay.
This is a population that is very integrated, not a great healthcare system, and they have a plurality of people that utilize tobacco, they
right.
smoke.
Right.
This is an upper respiratory illness, right? So you have a lot going on there,
right.
That is there. It's the unknown. Now, the second piece of this is, and this, and again, I mention my kids all the time. As a parent, I immediately look to what's going on with this with kids. Fortunately, and I was just trying to get some updated data earlier, and again, data is always coming in on this. To my knowledge, from what I have researched, there has not been one child that has passed away from this.
Right. I've heard that as well, that no one under the age of 15, and that most of the people that have passed away have either had what you pointed out, they've had other types of respiratory issues, or they have been immunocompromised in some way. The 9 people that died in Washington State were all in a nursing home where the virus swept through that nursing home. So these are people, not to minimize their deaths in any way, but these are
sure.
people who were especially susceptible to some sort of virus. I've even talked to doctors, Seth, that have said, look, about, you know, I don't want to put a number on it, a percentage on it, but it feels like about 80%. And again, I just want to qualify that by saying it feels like. But I will say this, and this is a fact. The vast majority of people who get coronavirus never report it to their doctor and get better. They get better.
Yeah.
They get mild symptoms or no symptoms, and then they get better. So when we have the World Health Organization throwing around numbers like 3.4% death rate, which is terrifying to people, you're talking about 3.4% of the people that we know have it, yet 80% of people potentially who have it may never even know that they had it or tell anyone that they had it. So there's
yeah,
it brings it more down to the flu level.
That's exactly right. And that 3.4% is also based on kind of erroneous numbers that really are difficult to substantiate to begin with. And so, you know, you just mentioned the flu, right? Well, listen, on average in the United States, if you take the annual deaths, we lose 90 people per day to the flu.
Yeah. Wow.
90 people, right? We lose close to, I think it's somewhere around that same number in car accidents. How many of you drove your car to work today?
Right.
Right. I mean, again, I'm not downplaying this. This is something we need to pay attention to. But is this Armageddon?
Right.
No. And it seems like we want to do that. And I think this is being stoked in some way because it sells.
Yeah.
And it's how people get funding, and it's how people get reelected, and it's how people can point to, hey, it's their fault versus their fault. And so, you know, we kind of elevate these things. Again, am I concerned about it? Yes. Am I still taking my family on a Disney cruise next week? Yes.
Right.
I'm not changing my life because of this, because if I were to live in my bubble of fear, there are a whole lot more things that are bound and likely to get me than coronavirus.
Yeah, I think you've got the right attitude about it. I mean, we should be concerned about it in the sense that we should be concerned about the flu every flu season. The one thing that you said, and I think this is what I've heard consistently from doctors as well, what I think drives the panic behind this is the unknown. This is a new virus, not coronavirus. It's been around since the 60s, but this is a new strain, like a new strain of the flu. And what one doctor told me was, we have a set flu season, and we know that during a certain part of the year, X number of people are going to die per month from the flu. We just know that. We know this many are going to go in the hospital, and this many of them are going to die. We don't know, because this is a new virus, does it confine itself to a season? Will it be less viable in the summertime when people spend more time outside? Is it more viable like the flu inside when people are congested close to each other? So that unknown is driving it. But you're right. I think for the media, this serves two purposes: their political agenda as well as their profit agenda. If people are freaked out, they're watching the news. You know, whether it's terrorism, whether it's intense election fights, or whether it's we're all going to die from the newest virus, it does this. But I don't remember this much consternation over the swine flu, which killed 12,000 Americans back in 2009.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that there's a couple of things. One is obviously the availability of access of information, the even more polarized we are on all of this. But, you know, listen, I was actually visiting with some folks earlier and that were somewhat concerned about this. And I said, since 1980, the United States has experienced 12 health epidemics. Out of 11 of the 12, and by the way, the 12th was HIV/AIDS. The 11 of the 12, and we've talked about, you know, swine flu, avian flu, H1B1, all of these others that were out there. The average period of time in which it was, you know, kind of out there was 13 weeks. Right.
Right.
And so, you know, again, as I look at, right, this is a strain. We don't know everything there is to know about it. I think that by the time we hit summer months, we're going to be going, hey, you know, remember that thing that we had?
Yeah.
You know, but again, I'm cautious about that. But that's just my gut and looking at the past experience of what we've seen before. And the last thing I'll say on this, well, unless you ask me another question on it, is we have the most brilliant minds in the world.
Yes.
Right here in the United States working on this, working on medicines. And listen, this is just a plug for our free market capitalistic system, because you know that the company that figures this thing out,
right,
is going to do really, really well.
Yep.
And so they're putting all of their most brilliant biochemists on this to figure this thing out.
Yeah, it's a race to get the next big profit margin. I love it. It's a great point. And by the way, if it does become the zombie apocalypse, I've got a bunker, so you're welcome to come over to my house. So we'll be safe
I'm
from the zombies.
Your way, my
yeah,
friend.
So be all
I'm
good.
Put it in Google Maps.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, let me just bug you for one more thing before I let you go, because I'm actually getting ready to write a column about this. And I think it's an important issue. The Republicans, let me put it this way. Bernie Sanders is right about the problems that a lot of Americans face. He's wrong about the solutions. I would not want to turn my health care over to the same organization that runs the DMV in my state.
Sure.
But what I don't hear is Republicans or conservatives coming forward with ideas that address the same problems, but with free market solutions. What would you do if you had the president's ear to say, we need to counter Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All with a better healthcare system for all? How would we build it?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things, and thanks for asking that question. I think this is super important and something that I've said that Republicans are not properly owning the narrative on, because actually the president and Alex Azar, they're doing some things that will actually do this. And fortunately for them, if they were interested, I wrote a book where it was a healthcare policy book. They could have access to it, right?
Right.
But here I will tell you, and I'll give you a few of the key things. First and foremost, health insurance is not healthcare. And unfortunately, we think about those two synonymously, and everything you're hearing coming out of the Democrats, whether it be public option, the expansion of the Affordable Care Act, or even Medicare for all that is talking about is health insurance. Until you address the drivers of cost, health insurance premiums, not going to change,
right?
We're just shifting who's paying the tab directly or indirectly, because the American citizen's paying the tab at the end of the day. But here's the first thing. We do need to reform our insurance market. Right now, the biggest we'll call it system flaw is insurance networks.
Right.
It's got to go away. They got to go away. Insurance company, listen, when I go have an auto accident, my car is covered, right?
Right.
If I have a health condition, I should be covered. It shouldn't be based on this doctor, that doctor, in-network, out-of-network, anesthesiologist, surprise billing, all the stuff that comes as part of that, because quite frankly, I don't have the information. If you solve for that, that is the foundational thing. Guess what's going to happen? Hospital systems are going to have to compete with each other.
Right.
They don't have to now. They can hide behind insurance contracts. Insurance companies are going to have to compete with one another on a different level. And information is going to be given to the consumer so that now we can shop properly for healthcare. The consumer is the driving solution behind our healthcare system. Information is critical. So we have to, again, first eliminate insurance networks so that way everybody competes on the same playing field with the same basis of information. And then you can do some regulatory things like, hey, if I want to save money, I should be able to get a tax advantage regardless of the health insurance plan I'm in.
Right.
Right. If I want to go buy an insurance policy because it's more competitive in Missouri than it is in Texas, my gosh, I should get to go do that. That's it's interstate commerce. Right. All of those types of things would absolutely put the consumer back in the driver's seat to drive costs down, which in turn would solve healthcare.
Well, and I think you hit the key word there that Republicans are not talking about, and that is consumer in charge. Bernie Sanders' plan sounds great when you realize, when you first think of, it's free, I don't have to pay anything, but it's not because of the taxes. And the countries like Denmark that he's always talking about, they pay, you know, middle class people pay a 60% tax rate. And I don't think the American people are prepared for that, but it would literally take the healthcare system completely out of this consumer's hands, even more so than it is now. Versus hearing Republicans come out and say, we have a plan that puts you in the driver's seat. And I just want to hear them start talking about that so that they can start winning the day on that issue, because I have deep concerns and passions for our healthcare system and how messed up it is. But I don't want that to drive us into an even worse system.
I couldn't agree more. Listen, the United States is responsible for 70% of our world's innovation when it comes to healthcare.
Yeah.
The reason for that is our free market system. We take that away,
right,
we don't have innovation anymore, and the rest of the world will suffer in addition to us. And you know, a couple of things that I think you said right there too is right. You know, I love these comparisons to Denmark. We are a country massively larger than Denmark, with a much greater variance in demographic. That you just can't. It's apples and oranges. You can't. And by the way, Denmark can do what they do because we don't.
Right.
They get the benefit of us not doing that.
Right.
And so, yes, we need more competition in the space. Competition comes from consumer engagement. Consumer engagement comes from information. We got to do a better job around that. But to your final point there, yeah, Republicans are failing in the messaging on this. They need to take it to the microphone or they will pay the price as they did in 2018.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Listen, Seth, it's great talking to you again. Seth Denson, healthcare expert and consultant. Have a great trip with your family. And again, if the zombie apocalypse breaks out, come on over to my house. We got you covered.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Have a good one. Thanks for for talking to us. Seth Denson, really great dude. Enjoy him very much. Yeah, on the Denmark thing, I think it's important to point out that in Denmark, you know, I don't know what the actual average tax rate is in Denmark, but it's pretty high, and it's higher than it is here. And on top of that, when we talk about the demographics of the country and the population of the country, America's a much bigger country. Denmark benefits from not having to have near as much military spending because we take care of Europe, we protect Europe. Denmark and other countries like that, they benefit from the fact that our pharmaceutical companies are doing the vast majority of the innovation and research because they can fix prices, whereas we can't, and that causes our prices to go up. By the way, the average the corporate tax rate in Denmark is like 32%. Denmark personal income tax rate, get this, this is the average. The average income tax rate in Denmark is 56%. So in Denmark, that's personal tax to income tax. It's higher than corporate tax. So in Denmark, 56 cents of every dollar they make goes straight to the government to provide them with what other freebies their government is giving them. Do you think America is ready to give 56 cents of every dollar to the federal government? And that's before we even start talking about our local taxes and fees and then sales taxes. Can you imagine? It could get upwards of 75%, even for middle-class people in a Bernie Sanders world. But that's not enough of a counter-argument. It should be, but it's not. For today's young minds who have been completely stripped of their ability to reason and they just want free stuff, we have to start addressing the problems they accurately recognize exist and providing free market solutions for them. I'm pretty passionate about this. You'll see a column coming out from me about this pretty soon as well. Hey, I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. My co-executive producer is Cameron Mills. We appreciate the production support we get from my friend Neil Kesterson at Dynamics Audio Productions. It's dxaudio.com. If you have any production needs, from being able to just restore old video or audio tapes of family members that you want to keep around to major Hollywood productions, they can get the job done for you. So check them out at dxaudio.com. I am on Instagram at Great Lelando and, of course, at The Disruption Zone. And I am on Twitter at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. Some jackwagon took the Disruption Zone, so it's Zone Disruption on Twitter. The best thing you can do to help me is to forward, share, and get your friends to subscribe to this podcast. It is free on Apple Podcasts as well as Google Play, and we're now on Spreaker. Just go to Spreaker.com and up in the search bar, search for Disruption Zone. It'll take you right to us. You can download and share from there. So share this podcast so that more and more people are listening and we can amplify the voice of common sense conservatism all around America. I'm Leland Conway. Thanks for listening to this Disruption Zone.